Blog Talk Radio.
Joe Louis lost to Rocky Marciano. Fought an old Joe Louis, or do you think that Rocky Marciano fought a quality Joe Louis? Fought a quality Joe Louis.
I don't know what Joe was doing. He was coming back to face.
Rabble rousing Rich Bergeron.
Yo, it's the tornado, Tony Pettycow.
And sad to hear the passing of Bert Sugar. I was actually very surprised to hear that he was only 75 because he looked 75 20 years ago.
Yeah, it seems like he's been around for, you know, since the days of like Jack Dempsey and Jack Johnson and Donnell Sullivan. it is very sad to hear that. I had the opportunity to meet Bert back in New York back in 1996 to 1997 when I was fighting at the New York Athletic Club. And Bert was there. Him and Arthur McCanny were two of the guests of honor. And, you know, I got the opportunity to meet both of them. And, you know, may they both rest in peace. Bert was a fine gentleman. Love the sport of boxing. He's an old school guy, and you don't have many of them left, and that's a sad thing. And, you know, you'd always see Bert there with his hat on and a cigar, and, you know, you never listening to him and watching him on TV and then meeting him in person. You know, he was not one to, talk down to his listeners. You have some people out there that you can never really get into. You know, really, like, and I'm not saying that anybody is better than anybody, personal case, a guy like Larry Merchant, you know, and I respect Larry. I'm not a tremendously big fan of his, but I respect him. But he's the guy like sometimes that, you know, he almost talks down to the listeners. Kurt wasn't like that, you know, very knowledgeable, very authoritative on the sport. He was a boxing rain man before I ever came along. And he looks like one of the old school guys, and he will be surely sorting this.
Yeah, I can remember being a young kid and, you know, just starting to pick up some of the boxing magazines when I got into the sport myself. And I used to get Boxing Illustrated all the time. And I decided one day that I wanted to, you know, write. And I was really young when I made that decision. I started writing these little short stories here and there. And so I came up with this idea when I was like around 12 or so to write about a guy who bets on boxing. So I knew that Bert Sugar was a boxing expert, and I actually wrote him at one of the magazines there that he worked at the time. And I don't think I referenced it specifically to him, but he actually wrote me back with a signed letter and everything. I kept it in my wallet for years. I don't know whatever happened to it, but signed letter and everything, encouraging me and saying that I should pick up one of his books, one of his 80 books. That he wrote over the course of his life. So he took the time to answer those letters that people sent him and sent his magazines personally with his own signature. That was pretty cool. It was, wasn't like a form letter either, you know. It was like specifically targeted to my questions. So I was impressed. But, you know, it's never going to die as far as his presence in boxing. It's going to be... They actually already started doing tributes to him on ESPN Classic a couple days ago. But he died of a heart attack, I guess, cardiac arrest. And he had been battling lung cancer, too. Which is not surprising. I mean, I never saw him actually smoke cigars. He used to have them on the set of all the interviews and analysis shows that he used to do without having it lit. Just have it in his mouth, but see, the clip that I just showed was the first time I actually saw him smoking it because he's outside. So I guess he didn't just use it as a status symbol or whatever. I saw somebody commented on one of the stories. I hope they bury him with a box of his favorite Cubans.
Right.
But, he's definitely a big figure in the sport. A lot of things people might not know about him. He actually graduated from law school, passed the bar in his hometown, and worked in advertising in New York before he got into writing in the 70s. And he purchased Boxing Illustrated in 1969, and he ran it until 1973. And then in 1979, he became editor and publisher of Ring Magazine and helped rebuild the magazine's standing in the industry after their pay-for-play ranking scandal. And he left Ring Magazine in 1983, and 5 years later became editor at Boxing Illustrated. So yeah, Boxing Illustrated is probably where I got in touch with him, because I remember specifically getting that magazine all the time back when I was a kid. So anyway, he's also been in movies. He played himself, of course, Night in the City, The Great White Hype, and Rocky Balboa.
Yeah.
So he will be definitely missed. We have a bunch of boxing-related stories here this week.
Yeah, I got one for you, Rich.
Oh, yeah?
Deerwater, Florida.
What about Florida? What about Florida?
I said this boxing story comes out of Clearwater, Florida.
Okay.
And I was down there for a few days, a couple baseball games. And so one game, you know, they're playing Boston. And as I'm walking around, I see a guy in a T-shirt of a former heavyweight champion of the world from Massachusetts. Would you like to shoot out a name and guess who it was?
Former Johnny Ruiz?
Yeah. Jerk. Undisputed heavyweight champion of the world. How about that?
Yeah. I met him at the Roxy. I think the night Hank Bundy fought up there in Boston. And Dennis Maurice was there. I was working the Rocky Marciano booth. I shook hands with him. I probably should have got my own picture with him, but I took Dennis's picture with him. Came out really good.
So, of course, you know, I stopped and talked to him, and, you know, I told him about couple years ago when I was going out to Fenway and how I wanted the T-shirt and the whole story, how I finally, how I met Dennis and, you know, and I told this man, and his name was Joey, and I can't remember his last name. He's actually a boxing referee and judge in Massachusetts and Connecticut and some of the New England area. And so as I was talking to him, you know, I told him the story, and I was like, hey, so you've done the statue dedication ever? He goes, oh, did it get approved? I'm like, yeah. Then I thought I saw, I told him the email that I saw from Dennis, that it's, you know, going to be the weekend of the anniversary of his title win over Walcott. So this guy and I talked for a little bit. I gave him one of my cards. I gave him my phone number, so it'll be nice to get, you know, to hear back from him. So, I mean, that was pretty cool. You know, you're all the way down in Florida, and you meet a guy that is a boxing referee and judge, and he's wearing a Rocky Marciano T-shirt. So, you know, of course, that was a good conversation piece to have with him.
Yeah.
Speaking of boxing and New England, you mentioned the name of Hammer and Hank Lundy, good friend of ours. He's fighting tomorrow night on ESPN2.
Yes, he is.
A lot of bad blood going on in this fight. A lot of trash talk.
Really?
Fighting with Danny Williams. They both have one defeat. And it should be interesting. You know, Hank is, you know, he's world-ranked now. He's, you know, in the top 10. And, you know, this is a tough fight for him to take. And it's a risky fight for him to take. But that's what really makes a champion, is, you know, you go out there, you take the fights that have a lot of risk to them, because, you know, even if you are able to win, it only, you know, helps build your character and, you know, prepare you for the tougher things that, you know, you're going to face when you fight that world-class opposition.
Right. Well, last weekend we had a little bit of controversy in the James Kirkland versus Carlos Molina fight. I don't know if you got a chance to watch it, but I did.
I watched it live. I was a little bit intoxicated. Okay, let me lie to you. I was very much intoxicated. it was the first night I was down in Florida, and I was sucking down a drink called a Dirty Girl Scout.
Oh, nice.
And I don't know what it is, but it's mint, chocolate, and very powerful. And I had sucked out a few of them at the time. I also had a few 7-7, which is Seagram 7 and 7-Up for all you non-drinkers out there. And by the time I was stumbling back to my hotel, I called my friend Mike up. And when I texted him the next day, I said, yeah, I had a good one on last night. He goes, yeah, I know you did. But I got back to my hotel, and I was able to watch the Kirkland fight and watch him get his ass kicked, you know, for the 9 rounds of the fight, and then scored a legitimate knockdown. Like I said, it was right at the end of the round. Did they have to disqualify? I don't think so, to be totally honest.
I really
don't think so. Because that's a sticky situation, you know. When there's 10 seconds to go in the round, the guy goes down, they're counting on him, and he gets up, and technically there's zeros on the clock, but the referee still has to finish that 8 count.
Well, not necessarily now, because the rule book says differently, according to Molina's people. I got a blog I put up this week about it, their official response to it. And they looked it up in the rule book, and actually a lot of people agreed with their perspective, because the rules actually, they don't have a standing 8 count rule. And it also states pretty specifically that the round ends as soon as the fighter stands up in that situation. So if the round ends and the count is still going, then the referee is the one who's wrong, because he should stop counting. And they came in after the bell. The bell rang.
What state was this in?
I think it was
in Texas. It was in Texas. Texas has the worst goddamn boxing commission that I've ever seen. I mean, I can't tell you how many fights they botched.
About controversy.
In fact, one of the judges had Kirkland ahead in the fight. That was Gail Van Hoy.
Yeah.
Gail Van Hoy has a tradition of turning in scorecards that, you know, he could score that fight, you know, with his eyes closed, it looks like, half the time. I forget what the one was recently. I think it was the Juan Diaz. Who did he fight that fight? I don't remember. Was it maybe the Juan Diaz Pauly Malignaggi fight? I think it was. Everybody thought Malignaggi won. And not only did Diaz get the decision, but Cal Van Hoy had it like 118 to 110, which basically means he gave him 10 out of the 12 rounds, which was absurd. Then they fought the rematch in Indiana, and Malignaggi won. but it's just, I know there was another one down there that this decision was horrendous. And Lawrence Cole has always been a lightning rod for poor officiating down there. I did not get to see the main event. I wanted to see the main event, but I sat down on the bed and woke up at 1:30 in the morning, not knowing where the hell I was. I was in a strange bed in a strange room with a strange TV on. I was a little confused.
It would have been great.
What?
If you could add a strange, beautiful girl to that scenario, it would be great, right?
You know what the shame of it was? The one that was serving me my drinks that night was a strange, beautiful girl in a short little kilt and knee-high socks.
Nice.
And she got me drunk, Rich. I think she was going to take advantage of me, but she let me walk home alone. let me give props out to Danny Garcia for, winning his first world title with a decision over Eric Morales. Danny, a former guest of ours. I don't really know him well personally. Obviously, we spoke to him on the show, and I've been in email communications with him in the past. And I've really been following his career since he was an amateur, so it's nice to see him doing well and representing the city so well. Also, representing the city of Philadelphia well is a fighter by the name of Brian Bye-Bye Jennings. Who I covered a few months ago down at the Asylum Arena in South Philly. The fight card that I covered last was originally supposed to be Fast Eddie Chambers and former world title challenger or I don't remember if he held it or not, but it was Sergey Lahokovich. And when Chambers pulled out of the fight with a broken rib, they scrapped that fight. Put on two undefeated heavyweights, Brian Jennings and Maurice Byram. And Jennings fought a very good fight. He took it to the bigger Byram and very crisp punches and won a hard-fought 10-round decision. So now he gets a fight with Lahokovic. And obviously he's the underdog in there. I did not get to see the fight. It was not we did not have that channel at my hotel. But he carved them to pieces. I mean, they said he carved him up so bad, it was like my father with his Ginsu knives, you know, on Thanksgiving night.
Who carved him?
They stopped it in the ninth round after Jennings, tore Lahokovic up pretty good, and they, stopped the ninth round awarding Jennings the TKO victory. So, once again, congratulations to another Philadelphian, proving his mettle out there. Moving himself up the ladder to being a contender.
I also heard there was a change on the Hank Lundy card. Your favorite guy there, Hector Camacho Jr., got bumped because he had a hand injury, and there's another Philadelphia guy who got bumped up to that card, that fight.
And you know what? The Philadelphia guy that got bumped up to that card is a guy by the name of Eric Mitchell, who used to train at my old gym. Eric and I were never really close, to be totally honest. It was him and his brother. There was Aaron Mitchell and Eric Mitchell. I think Aaron was the better of the two. I'm not really sure. But we used to call those the twins. Couldn't really tell them apart. And they were like, they would always travel together. They'd always go, from gym to gym to gym. And they never really were overly. They were never like really brotherly with anybody there. They were just themselves. We used to call them gypsies because they would travel to this gym, they'd travel to that gym. And the one thing that I remember, Steve Cunningham, former Cruiserweight champion, was getting on their case a couple of years ago when we first interviewed him. because he said, with those guys, talented fighters, but they were trying to embrace too much of the thug image. And he goes, this is not, he goes, Steve Cunningham was coming out and he goes, I want to help promote, you know, boxing as a sport, but I'm also using it as a way to provide for my family, but also express the word of Jesus Christ. And he's like, he goes, I want to be a positive role model. He's like, I don't curse, I don't drink, I don't do anything. He goes, I want to be a positive role model for kids, because a lot of kids that are looking up to, you know, these athletes today, they see poor role models. And Steve Cunningham said, you know, I don't want to be like that. And the two guys he pointed out were the Mitchell brothers, because you had Eric Murder Mitchell and Aaron Homicide Mitchell. He goes, that is not the image that you want to, you know, project to, you know, your youth right now that's very impressionable. You know, we're having enough trouble. And this is obviously before the controversy of a few, a week or so ago with the killing down in wherever it was and the kid with the hoodie on, Trayon or whatever his name is.
Yeah, the media totally just and, wrecking that story right now. Fact check of the hour.
You heard what Iceman John Foley said about it, right?
No, not yet. I wouldn't be surprised.
Well, I always follow all of his Facebook posts, and what I like about John is John will sometimes he'll say things and he'll purposely mean them to be funny. Like I have now, like the one he wrote tonight was, I have banned the use of the word bud. You cannot call someone your bud anymore because that sounds stupid. And he's just being funny, you know. John's got a good sense of humor. But the one thing he wrote on that was very serious, he goes, where was the outrage a couple of years ago when a young fighter that he was training was murdered, not by a town watchman, but just by, maybe it was like a guy, I don't know if it was a gang-related or what, but he had a young fighter that was murdered in like a drive-by. He's like, where was the outrage about that? Because it was black on black.
Well, the thing is, like, you know, this today in particular, the media is like having a field day because they finally get this surveillance video of the guy when he gets to the police station. And, I mean, I don't really know exactly what happened, and nobody really does. You know, there was only a couple witnesses, and they don't even really have the same story. But it's pretty clear there was a situation where it got into a fight. You know, so they were fighting. They were on the ground rolling around fighting. That's a stated fact. And the police report even says the guy had a wound on the back of his head and he suffered a broken nose. Now, he didn't realize he had the broken nose the next day. But they're looking at this surveillance video on the news all day today talking about, oh, we can't see a wound on the back of his head. Oh, we can't see. It doesn't look like his nose is broken. Now, I never had my nose broken, but I've seen a lot of broken noses. And there's not always a way to tell if a guy's nose is broken. So, I mean, especially in the thing on the back of the head, you're not going to see a cut usually if it was a small cut. When you get a cut in the head, which you have, and the guy, even though the guy was bald primarily, he had a little bit of hair on the back of his head. So if the cut was under there, you're not going to see it. And the video is so bad, even when they blow it up, it's hard to tell, you know, if there was ever anything close to a cut. Because you can't. You know, the video is too bad. So it just blows my mind that the media can just go there and, like, salivate over that stuff and try to make claims they can't prove, you know, and just run to conclusions. It's just crazy. And, I mean, I don't know what happened, like I said, but, you know, there are reports that this kid was not an angel. You know, he had been caught with a bunch of jewelry and a screwdriver that they thought was a burglary tool when he was at one of the schools. And he'd been busted for having a baggie that smelled like weed. So he wasn't an angel. And if he did steal those, you know, pieces of jewelry from houses, maybe he was casing the neighborhood. Who knows? But, you know, I can understand why it's gotten to the point that it has, but... it's just one of those situations where the media is, like, really making it worse than it should be, unfortunately. And everybody's saying, oh, there should be an investigation. Yeah, there should be an investigation. Before you start talking all this trash about what really happened, you should let the investigation go forward and then say something. But, man, to just, like, And then, you know, they're watching this video. I saw it on today on CNN of the guy coming to the police station. And the camera's like 20 feet away from the guy. And you really can't tell. I mean, it's not like a booking photo of the guy because they didn't even really book him. They didn't arrest him. So you can't really get a good look at his face or the back of his head. And they even say he was treated by an EMT in the police car. And they're all talking about, oh, the guy doesn't have gloves on when he's handling him. Well, if he's already been treated and there's no blood, why do you need gloves? And then the funniest thing was they said, all right, you know, this guy had a bloody nose. It would be bleeding everywhere. That's not true either. Sometimes you can get a broken nose and it doesn't bleed. So that's out of line too. But they were saying, well, if it did, you know, it should be all over his shirt. And 2 seconds before that, they said, well, he was wearing that jacket, that same jacket that he has on at the scene. If you're wearing a jacket, you know, you probably have it zipped up. So the blood, this jacket was black and red. The blood would probably not appear on the video if it was still there. You know, but anyway, that's my 2 cents on that. I don't, you know, I'm not gonna say the guy should be arrested, but you know, sounds to me like there was a fight. It got out of control. If there's any recourse, it's civil. You know, the family can sue him. But even then, you know, how much money are they gonna get out of this guy? It doesn't sound like a millionaire. But I just wish the media would stop acting like, you know, they know everything about it, and that you know, they run with the sensationalism of it. That you know, it's got to be racist because the guy who's not black shot a black guy.
Right. But that's what Trump said. He's like, where was the outrage when the fighter that he was training was you know, gunned down? And I know, you know, guys that I trained with, I'm going back about a good 10 or 12 years ago, his name was Troy. And, you know, he was, you know, at the gym, and I remember, I forget what happened, I forget if he had something where him and another guy had an altercation, and I don't know if he hit him or, you know, what happened, but he was gunned down. Once again, nobody ever heard about it. You know, it was just, you know, another inner city murder, an inner city, you know, drive-by or whatever it was, or retaliation or drug-related killing. It's just, this one is, you know, it's not, it's more, you know, it's not like the inner city. It's, you know, it's not some of the quote-unquote Facebook stuff. Just, what else can you say?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's obviously one of those hot-button issues that people love to talk about and speculate on. And, you know, there's a reason it's in the news, and it's because particularly the parents made a big stink about it, and because the guy didn't get arrested. I mean, usually in those cases, the guy would get arrested and then cleared later, but they never even arrested him. And it's called attention to this big law, the Stand Your Ground law. Which sounds to me kind of an ambiguous law. There's a lot of ways you can interpret it. And I just don't think that there's enough evidence one way or the other to decide, you know, to arrest the guy. That's why they did what they did. They let him go. They gave him his gun back. That's the end of the story. Now, this guy, whether he's guilty or not, you know, they're not going by the guilty until proven innocent philosophy at all. And this guy can't even go out and show his face anywhere. You know, whether he gets cleared in the long run or not, people are going to hate him. The freaking Black Panthers put out a $10,000 bounty on the guy. So, I mean, it's just ridiculous, the attention that it's gotten, and, you know, the bias that it's formed. It's unbelievable. But I hope they do, you know, eventually get the facts together and start reporting correctly on it. It just blows my mind that people in the media could just go out there and get away with saying stuff like that. There's experts too. Oh, I don't see any blood. It does look like he's got a broken nose. It's like, do you guys hear yourself?
Right.
ridiculous. Like, it's kind of like these people. Here's a segue for you. Kind of like all these people saying that the latest Kimbo Slice fight is fixed. Have you heard this?
No, I haven't.
Oh, man. Well, the video's out there. And it's a grainy, kind of shaky video, just like the one that they've been showing on the media, this Zimmerman dude. But Kimbo Slice fought this guy, Brian Green, and he wasn't doing that great. You know, his Brian Green's corner is yelling at him at the beginning of the fourth round that he's winning, and they're giving him the time updates and this and that, and then they yell out 15 seconds left. You know, take it home, and he gets caught in the corner, and he gets hit with three consecutive shots, and the third one is a real bad uppercut that hits him right on the point of the chin, and you get the textbook head turn before any knockout that you see when a guy gets hit hard on the chin, and Green falls on the ground and gets counted out. Knockout, and it's 3.3 seconds left in the fight that Green was winning against Kimbo here. So, of course, everybody says, oh, the fight is fixed, the fight is fixed, the fight is fixed. Now, I watched it with a friend of mine yesterday who was on my boxing team in college, and we both said, no way, that's fake. The guy deserves an Oscar if he faked that. Because you can tell, I mean, he is unconscious. It's not like he's, you know, just rolling around or whatever. He's out cold. He's motionless. All you can see is his breathing. You know, and it was a nice uppercut. It doesn't really look that hard on the angle that they show, because, you know, these guys are down below the ring apron looking up, so you can't really get a good eye on what exactly happened. But even Green said after the fight, he said, there's no way, you know, I would ever throw a fight. He'd been in MMA too, and he actually was giving up a lot of weight to Kimbo. He almost looked like he should be in the light heavyweight ranks instead of heavyweight. And, you know, he was doing good just kind of dancing around, but he wasn't protecting himself well. And he just got caught with three consecutive hard punches and went down like a sack of potatoes. But, you know, for all these people to yell about the fight being fixed, I mean, come on. He's doing four rounders, and I don't think they really need to have fights, you know, fixed at this point in a four-round fight. And there was a big crowd there and everything, but I just don't think it was that important to him to have an undefeated record to pay a guy to, you know, throw a fight like that. It just doesn't make any sense. He looked pretty bad after the fight, too. He had a black eye, and, you know, his face was really red. But he definitely exposed Kimbo as not as great as everybody thinks he is boxing anyway. And a lot of that could be his age. You know, he's getting past his prime, and, you know, he's obviously in that mode where he's doing it just for money again. Doesn't seem like he has a real passion for it, but who knows?
So, it's one more thing I said about him. I was watching him, you know, he's doing those backyard YouTube fights, and then I watched him in his brief MMA career, including his wins and his losses. Some of his very destructive losses, and watched him, as a professional boxer. I've seen some of his fights, and if you happen to remember from a couple of years ago when I was writing that column, Unlimited, and it was a fantasy dream fight. So I said I'm looking at two fighters from different eras that obviously could have never fought themselves in. Or could not have, like, Jack Dempsey and Rocky Marciano couldn't have never fought each other because there was almost 30 years between the times. And I said the one thing I said on there was, you know, until Kimbo Slice laces up the gloves for a real professional boxing match, don't ask me about Kimbo versus Mike Tyson. And then he had his first professional boxing match, and you sent me that blurb saying, hey, remember when you said this? Yeah, you can talk about it. And I said, Mike Tyson, as an old Mike Tyson, would still, if he had any, if he came in at 30% focus, he'd win easily. If it was the Mike Tyson in his prime, it would be basically a murder. it would just be that much of a massacre. The reason is Kimbo comes in very square. His shoulders are square, almost like he is a wrestler going for a takedown. And he's got his head down, but it's not like his chin is tucked. His head is more down, so he's vulnerable to uppercuts. Mike Tyson, if you happen to remember, had a very good uppercut. And then he usually would lift your head up and take it off with a hook. Kimbo does not have great endurance. So you're looking at all these factors. You know, he doesn't have great speed. He just happens to hit hard. The thing about his endurance is, I said this a year ago now. I said, if I was Kimbo's manager, I would go out there, put him in against a couple very easy fights, get his name. I mean, people know his name. Really get him out there with a zero on his record. And I said, before he fights anybody with any good credentials, get him a big fight. Get him a name. And I said, throw as much money at Mike Tyson as you can, because that was a name that would, I mean, break records for bringing in money. Due to the fact that people from our generation, we grew up watching Mike Tyson. I remember being a 10-year-old kid and watching him, you know, bounce Trevor Burbick off the canvas like a basketball, or, you know, destroy Michael Spinks, or take a tune-up heavyweight title fight against the number one contender as a tune-up and a blue that was what he was. So, yeah, I still remember that. Then you have people from my father's generation. But, yeah, maybe they grew up with the Ollies and the Frasers and, you know, the Sonny Listens and the Ken Nortons and the Foremans and all those guys. But they still, you know, when I was watching those Mike Tyson fights on HBO, I was watching them with my father, right? So you got that generation. Then you have the younger generation that remembers Mike Tyson from The Hangover. And then you got all these MMA heads out there, you know, that know Kimbo from that. You're talking about a shitload of money. If you can't get Mike Tyson, well, damn it, you can probably get Evander Holyfield. If you can't get Evander Holyfield, I bet you Ray Mercer would take the fight. What do you think?
Yes, definitely. Riddick Bowe.
Riddick Bowe would take it. He'll fight anybody. But you got, like, a lot of these guys that maybe are past their prime. You know, they would love the payday for it. And even skill-wise, Mercer in a boxing match destroys him.
Yeah.
Riddick Bowe would probably beat him at this stage, even though Riddick Bowe's really slowed down a lot. I mean, I'm not even talking about your top tiers of the heavyweights like the Klitschko's right now, or like the Derek Chisora's, David Haye. You know, all of them, and or even your guys like your Eddie Chambers or Kevin Johnson, Kevin Kingpin Johnson, who's a top prospect. I'm not even talking about those top tier guys. I'm talking about guys that were, you know, champions and well known, world regarded fighters back in their day that are past their prime now, that would love to take it for a shot at the money.
Yep.
Right? And then that's the thing. I think once Kimbo gets in there with anybody with any semblance of skill, he's not going to stand a chance.
Well, yeah.
I don't think he's got a good enough chin. I know he doesn't have the defense, and I don't think he has the chin either.
Yeah, he had to actually
get
this guy on the last minute, scenario where one of his opponents backed out and, you know, he just kind of threw this fight together. So it was pretty crazy the way they set this up. I guess there is some controversy over whether Green sent in the right scouting videos or whatever. So they were saying the fight was off and then the fight was back on. So there was a little confusion. He didn't know who he was going to fight until the last minute, I think, and then turned out to be the guy he was supposed to fight. So, for whatever reason, he didn't seem he was prepared for this one. But he's definitely going to have a lot more fights to get into the shape that he needs to be to go 8 or 10 rounds. I'd say they'll have to get him in at least 10 more fights before he's going to fight anybody of any notability. And that could take a while. We'll see. But anyway, another guy is making a comeback this weekend, Kelly Pavlik, March 31st, Saturday. He's going to be, again, in Texas, in San Antonio this time, fighting a guy named Aaron Jaco, who only has a 15-2 record. And his father fought heavyweight from 81 to 94 and retired with a 24-25-1 record. And Aaron isn't really a career opponent, but he's not in world title contention either. But Pavlik's been off and on with alcoholism, DUIs, and stints in rehab. And he actually pulled out of a fight in August because he claimed he didn't like the deal. And his promoter, Top Rank, was so pissed off that they took him out of contention for a Lucien Butte fight, for last November. But apparently now he's definitely turned over a new leaf, and he's back on track. And he's going to turn 30 on April 5th. And he's actually gone away from his hometown to start a new slate in Oxnard, California. And he actually even left his trainer, Jack Lowe, and is working with Robert Garcia, who trains Brandon Rios and Nonito Donaire. So who knows? This could be a real reinvention of Pavlik. But I think even with a guy like Jaco, who only has 2 losses, who could give him a tough fight, he's going to really have to get a knockout to impress anybody, I think. But we'll see. He could really have a lopsided win and go the full distance and impress a lot of people that way, too. But I'm definitely pulling for him. I like to see the comeback and the guy beat up his demons. So we'll see. He was originally set to fight Paul Williams in the spring of 2010, but he had a tough bout with a staph infection. And it turned out he was allergic to the antibiotics they gave him, and he almost died. So he's come back from a lot more than just alcoholism. But we'll see what happens. Anyway. Also got some Manny Pacquiao news. We talked about last week a little bit about how Pacquiao was in trouble with the tax man. Well, now it seems like Pacquiao's going on the offensive, and he's saying that they're blowing it out of proportion, that the whole deal was designed to embarrass him. And basically, the government is even saying now over there in the Philippines that they just need documentation. And Pacquiao is telling them that basically he was overseas at the time they requested it. He didn't get the notice that they needed it. So it sounds like it's all going to be swept under the rug when they finally get the right paperwork. There's also talk of Pacquiao moving up the ranks in the political arena over there in the Philippines. Right now he is a small-time senator, and he wants to be a big-time governor of the province of Sarangani. And he says he's better fitted for an executive role. And it is an exact quote for him. He says, "Being a legislator isn't hard work. It's kind of light. But an executive position is 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. I feel I'm better suited to that. I feel I can do many things for my province." And there's always been talk that he wants to run for president someday. But I actually didn't realize this until now, until I read this piece actually yesterday. He can't even run for president until 2022 because they have to be 40 years old or older to run for the Philippine president position. So I guess people that were talking about that earlier didn't know that. Talking about him retiring next year. But I would think you'd have to be governor for a little bit of time to get your profile out there and to prove that you actually can be president. So we'll see. But I think he's actually already said he's only going to have a few more fights, but I think we'll see the last of him in the ring next year. It depends, though, on when that Mayweather fight happens and what the result is, because I think if he ends up beating Mayweather, he'd probably retire right after that. It'd be a good way to go out. But I bet he'll fight somebody else and then Mayweather, probably go into 2013. Then there's always the possibility of him fighting Mayweather in November and then calling it quits before the end of the year. But his team seems to think it's probably not going to happen this year. Probably next year that he retires. So that's your Manny Pacquiao news for the week. Let's see what else we got. Mo Lawal. Let's go to MMA news. I don't know if you heard anything about Mo Lawal, but talk about a tough situation. And this guy is saying that his most recent positive test for banned substances was the result of some over-the-counter supplements, like a lot of people say. Could be true in this situation. He doesn't sound like a guy who would throw his career away like that if he knew what he was taking. But he's had some battles with staph infections. He actually said he was considering stopping treatment, even if he felt like he was going to die. Because of this knee surgery he had in January, he developed a staph infection. But this is after he tested positive, and basically, it was one of those situations where he was very critical of the whole deal with Strikeforce when the UFC bought them out. He actually made a lot of waves when he came out and said Strikeforce is a dying cancer patient. And just really was critical of the whole takeover. But they still kept him. And they allowed him to stay under contract and let him fight again. So, I mean, I thought that was the worst thing you could say. And, of course, Dana White weighed in on, what he had to say and bad-mouthed him. But it was one of those situations where Strikeforce had been said to, be allowed to run things as usual. Business as usual was the key phrase. So they didn't really put it in Dana White's hands to, get rid of the guy. It was Scott Coker's decision whether to keep him or not. And of course, Scott Coker obviously kept him. Now, this week, we find out Mo Lawal got thrown out for something he wrote on Twitter. And it sounds like a familiar story because it is. They just brought a guy back, Miguel Torres, who made a joke about a rape fan on Twitter and then made amends.
I always, the one young kid that I train, Jeff, I always make him watch Tommy Hearns because that's a small, lanky kid. He's filling out a little bit more. When he first started with me, he was a beanpole. And I said, you got to learn to put some torque on that right hand. I said, watch some clips. I said, just because you're tall and you're thin, you got long, skinny arms. People were like, oh my God, look at his arms. He can probably punch so hard. Or look at that guy. He's going to be skinny. He can't punch at all. So watch Tommy Hearns. I said, that man, his arms were thin. His legs were spindly. And I said, he hit you so hard with that right hand. I said, I might put your head in about the 18th row. But Tommy Hearns is one of the best ever, man, And for as hard as he could punch, he was an exceptional boxer. Exceptional boxer. And that's why I know a few weeks ago when we had the opportunity to talk to Richard Steele, I was very interested in asking Richard what it was like to be in the middle of that ring when Hagler and Hearns were just going tooth and nail at each other.
Yeah, I still don't believe that guy from RopeDopeRadio.com turned that article down. So it's really disappointing. to see that kind of disrespect from somebody that's supposed to know boxing. You know, it just blows my mind. Fuck that guy.
Yeah,
that's too bad.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that is a shame. Somebody that, you know, is supposed to know boxing and be an advocate for the sport and go out there and, you know, my thing is, there's a bunch of, you know, websites out there that do the boxing and do the martial arts. And, I'm going to do it more from a boxing standpoint right now. Obviously, that's my sport. Boxing right now is a sport that, you know, is having a little bit of trouble. You know, I think in the U.S., you know, on a national level, it's having some difficulty, not like it, you know, it used to be. You know, obviously not worldwide, because in Europe and in, you know, Mexico and South America, it's very popular. You know, Germany is very popular. But in the States, you know, it's struggling. So now, it's like with me personally, I don't want to do anything to hurt any other person that's covering the sport, because I think we're all in this together. Anybody that can help the sport out, we're in this together. So, I mean, I don't want to, you know, trash somebody if they're doing a good job and they're trying to help promote the sport in a clean and honest way. I'm going to do anything I can to help them, just because I don't see them as my competition. I see them as my teammates.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if it makes sense, but...
I agree. Well, we got a couple more MMA stories. Actually, three, if you count the boxing and MMA story I have right here. Of course, we know Freddie Roach is one of those guys who is a fan of MMA, even though he coaches boxers primarily. He does coach a few boxers, I mean a few MMA guys, most notably George St. Pierre. Well, Yahoo recently featured a little story about the top five boxers in MMA, chosen by both Freddie Roach and Andre Ward. The top five here. Number five is KJ Nunes, who actually was mentioned by a guest a couple weeks ago, Stephen Andrews of MMAXM.com. And Freddie says, KJ works out at my gym. He's very dedicated. His work ethic is great. I just love his tenacity in the ring. He comes to fight, and he's all about action. And coming in at number four is Mr. High Times, Nick Diaz. Freddie says, Nick Diaz is one of the most exciting fighters in the world today. Great with his hands. He got a little sidetracked in his last fight, but I'm looking forward to facing him against GSP because there's a lot of talk about that. Andre Ward says, Nick, simply put, is a beast. If I'm orthodox, I'm going to want a left-handed guy in camp to have my brain work from a different angle, from a different side, just in terms of what he brings to us. He's a beast. His stand-up is awesome. I like Nick Diaz. The guy comes straight at you. He's proven at our gym against other guys, other top guys, that he can hang. If he ever chose to stop fighting MMA and go into boxing, he's one of the main guys that I think could be successful. And number three, the guy doesn't even really fight anymore, BJ Penn. Freddie says, one of the best strikers I've been in the ring with. It's been quite a few years ago. I think maybe he's close to retirement now. I used to call him the James Toney of MMA because his weight would fluctuate quite a bit. He'll fight low weights to up to heavyweights. He'll fight anyone in the world. He's a good guy to be around, a hard worker and a great striker. And number two, George St. Pierre. And Freddie says, he's one of the best guys in the world, just a real gentleman. One of the best students I've ever had. How long did he go home and practice that in front of the mirror last night? Because I show him a move, he comes back whether he knows it the next day. You know, he practiced all night in the mirror. I love that. He's a hard worker. That's what it's all about, hard work. And number one, Anderson Silva. And Freddie says, I had the honor of working with Anderson for about 5 or 6 days in a row. I actually saw footage of Anderson Silva in Freddie's wild card gym, just doing some sparring for the first time. That was a couple of years ago. And he didn't look pretty good. And Anderson told Freddie, I'm pretty good at MMA, but I'm not too good at boxing. He's a real humble guy, very talented. He's one of the best guys who really understands distance and timing. He fights off the ropes a little bit. I told him that can be a little dangerous at times. I told him to be careful, but he'll suck you in. He'll set you up. He's one of the most intelligent fighters I've ever worked with. And Andre added that he's trained with some of MMA's finest, including Gilbert Melendez and Jake Shields. Andre said that he's a big fan of Uriah Faber. All these guys are local guys that I support, he says. I respect them. They respect us. I don't look at it as a competition between boxing and MMA. So there you have it. That's according to the boxing experts, the top five MMA boxers. And, you know, it's kind of unfortunate we don't see more guys box better in MMA. But as far as comebacks in MMA and old guys, I'll tell you, if you think, are you with me?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right. Got a little delay there for a second. But we got a couple guys worth talking about here in their 40s. One of them, nicknamed the Pastor of Disaster, believe it or not, John Anglin. He ended up, as a kid, he called himself a full-blown junkie from a tough background. He was as fat as 305 pounds. And on March 31st, he's going to officially unveil his new alter ego as the Pastor of Disaster, POD for short. He's now weighing about 190 pounds, and he's 45 years old. He actually is a pastor, of course, at Amarillo's New Hope Community Church. And he's going to be in an MMA fight in Midland on March 31st. And it's basically his latest step in his transformation from a troubled kid and fat adult to a man at peace with himself and his faith. And he says there isn't a person in life that hasn't felt like they've been kicked in the head. Some stand better than others. He's a native of Farmington, New Mexico. He's married for more than 20 years with two daughters, and he found his faith when he was in his 20s at a church in Colorado. He was ordained in 2006 and has been a pastor ever since. And when he was at Amarillo College, he took an MMA class from a guy named Jimmy Boyd, who owns Amarillo's Elite MMA and Fitness, and that's where he trains. And he said, when I turned 40, I decided, man, I can't go out like this. I started working out on my own and changed my diet and got down to about 230. I was looking to kick it up to another level, and there was Jimmy Boyd's class. I asked once if I could stay after class and roll with some of the guys, you know, spar with them. Other than having to buy his own mouthpiece, Anglin said he was a former high school wrestler, too. He once held his own against bigger, more experienced competitors. And then Jimmy took him aside and said with some training and technique, he might be pretty good at it. So he's going to fight on the 31st, and he's going to be in the pulpit the next morning. And the people at the church are really stoked about it and are really completely behind it, he says. And it was actually a member of the church who gave him the Pastor of Disaster nickname. And they gave him a T-shirt with the nickname on it, too. And he says there are a lot of good illustrations when you're talking about standing for Christ that you can definitely relate to from this kind of an arena. I preached about it and used different examples about your stance and your guard, things that transfer over spiritually. Definitely God has changed my life, and MMA has definitely taken my life to a different mental and physical level. Honestly, once you come in here and go 3 or 4 rounds with these kids, you feel like you can do anything and survive anything. And he says, talking about fighting kids, sometimes it's more of a mental strain on them. Once an older guy gets a hold of them, it's kind of like their dad giving them a beating. He said, my dad is 68 years old, but if he ever squared off with me, I would be humbled. I feel like the guys respect me, I love them and care about them. They come to me sometimes with crazy stuff, and I don't mind helping them however I can. It's really a blessing to work with them. And, of course, we got a Bible quote. In Ephesians, it says, when having done all else, stand. Whatever you have done everything and exhausted everything, you stand, he said. It is how you set your base and how you take the impact of your problems, whether it's somebody kicking you in the head or something in life. So, look out for that guy, the pastor of disaster. It's a pretty interesting story. Best of luck to him. Another guy, 47 years old, coming up on a fight here. 5'7", 180 pounds. It's a guy named James Clark. And if his name might sound familiar to you, he's got a lot of Guinness records. And I couldn't even believe this was possible when I read this. But this guy, even at 47, he's a pretty tough dude. He's a former Elk River wrestler from, I don't know where Elk River is, what state, but basically took up mixed martial arts 2 years ago, and now he's coming up on a brutal B-R-U-T-A-A-L tour title shot. He upset 185-pound contender Josh Erdman, 21 years old, of Rochester, in a 3-round unanimous decision on February 24th. And he was a huge underdog, he said, and they thought it must have been a fluke for somebody as old as me to beat him. They made me fight another guy before I got the title shot. And so they set him up with John Molina, 20-year-old, from Minnesota Martial Arts Academy, and Clark won that one by knockout in the second round on March 3rd at the Hyatt Hotel in Minneapolis. I guess we're talking about Minnesota. So Clark will get the title shot that Erdman was supposed to get in June against the winner of Joe Sullivan versus Thomas Herrera on April 28th at the Target Center. And the promoter, Nick Games, said Clark is the oldest man to ever earn a title shot. Previous record was 37. Clark lives in Champlin and owns and operates a fight club, MMA gym, in Crystal. He has a 7-3 record as a pro. And in the bout against Erdman, he said his opponent threw a kick at his head immediately after the touching of gloves, a breach of etiquette that angered him. So he landed a right hook behind the ear when Erdman tried to shoot it and took him down with a couple lateral drops. In the second 3-minute round, he threw some head punches while Erdman kicked at his legs and got ahead on points. And the promoter again says, what makes Jim good is that he's a lot more mentally prepared than most fighters. He's very good at grappling, and he comes from a family of wrestlers. And Clark grew up on a hobby farm, tutored by his dad, John, a Chicago native who was a semi-pro boxer with over 100 bouts. John turned the barn into a boxing arena with a 24-by-24-foot ring and had fighters from Mexico or Cuba to train during the summer months. Clark wrestled for the Elks and placed third in the state his senior year, 1983. He has a jiu-jitsu background as well, and after college, he began an assault on the Guinness Book of World Records in the fitness categories. He held 30 records at one time or another, and here's a couple of examples. 751 push-ups in 27 and a half minutes, which I know you can do with one hand, right, Tony? All right, folks, sorry about the disconnection. We got a new wireless router here at the house, and every time my dad gets a call on the magic jack, I magically get disconnected. So I guess you can't use Skype and magic jack at the same time if you have a certain wireless router like I have. But anyway, now we're back. I was talking about Jim Clark. He's a big record guy. and I just finished saying he has the record for push-ups in 27 and a half minutes. He did 751 push-ups.
Wow.
Also, 1,001 pull-ups and 1,001 sit-ups in an hour and 17 minutes. Unbelievable. And that actually beat fitness legend Jake LaLanne's record. 33,000 push-ups in 24 hours. Tough to do. And 44,001 sit-ups in 24 hours. And that got him a spot on the David Letterman show. 44,001.
Oh, my God.
Doesn't that sound impossible?
Wow.
Yeah. And he took a break from record setting to earn advanced degrees in theology, Spanish, Greek philosophy, and Platonic metaphysics. What? You're coming in really soft.
I said, you got to have the Platonic metaphysics in there.
Yeah, I guess so. Basically, he's had varied jobs to the point of teaching classics at a private school and an online college, moving furniture. And in 2010, he published a book called Platonic Superman to tell about his spiritual journey and show how metaphysical awareness gave him what may be considered superhuman strength. And he currently offers hypnosis to help people with their pains and their fears. So maybe I can get him to hypnotize me to forget about my carpal tunnel issue. Yeah. He's married again, like the pastor. He's married with two kids, and he started his gym in 2009 with 3,000 euros, or $5,000. He earned fighting in Ireland. And Brutal, the organization he's fighting for the title, sends most of its champions to the UFC. But he says, I can't do that. The UFC won't take someone as old as me, but I've still put myself in position to fight for a title. So there you have it. That's pretty much all the news we have for the week. We don't have a guest this week. We got an overload of guests the next couple weeks, if all goes well. We're working on Christy Martin and Mia St. John for the 12th of April. We got Cody Bollinger next week, April 4th or 5th, I think. April 4th. No, 5th. Wait a second. Let me look at the calendar. April 5th. So, we're working on another guest for then, too, a female mixed martial artist named Kat Zingano. So, we're going to have one more week of MMA, and then we're going to get to women's boxing for you, hopefully. We tried to get Reggie Johnson for tonight's show, but apparently we crossed our wires there and didn't get it. Get that set up in time. So maybe later in April we'll get him back on the show. I did talk to him briefly on Facebook the other day, and he's in pretty good spirits. He's working on setting up another comeback, going for a world title again. So we definitely wish him well in that respect, and hope he can get a fight set up soon. And maybe we'll have him on to preview that fight. Who knows? But, if you're going to go somewhere when you stop listening to us, I just noticed that Mike Tyson is on CNN on Piers Morgan. So if you want to catch his interview, I don't know if it's done yet, but I just heard him talking about the death of his daughter there, which is still bothering him, of course. It's a tough thing to get over. But, talk about a different guy than when he was fighting. He's definitely reformed. But that's all I have. If you want to look at the upcoming fights, there's nothing really going on in the UFC, but just go to sharedog.com/events. You can see all the MMA fights upcoming. Just go to they're going to show you the featured upcoming fights automatically, but if you click on the other upcoming fights tabs, tab. It'll show you everything that's coming up this weekend. We got three or four fights tomorrow night and then a bunch Saturday night. And, of course, BoxRec.com for all the boxing stuff. And I want to give a shout-out to a couple of our sponsors. DrinkCocaine.com, of course, big sponsor. ZionShop.com. Check them out for cheap Zion stuff. And I wanted to give a shout-out to a potential future sponsor, Milifidel, M-I-L-I-F-I-D-E-L.com. They're a clothing company that's big on the military, and it's a combination of military and fidelity that went into their name there. So M-I-L-I-F-I-D-E-L.com is their website. They could be a future sponsor of ours, and talk to one of the main players today on that. So we'll see. I'm looking forward to doing some work for them. They fit right in with my military school background, so that's good. And until next week, when we'll have at least Cody Ballinger on, and possibly as well, we're going to have Kat Zingano. I guess we'll talk to you then.
All right. Well, I guess that's time to peace out. Until next week, good luck at Lundy tomorrow night, ESPN2. Make sure to tune in, and hopefully we'll keep on the ascent to the world title.
Oh, yeah. Go Hank.
Yeah. All right, man. Until next week, you know, out.
All right. Thanks a lot. Take it easy, folks.